President Obama likes to say that America needs a raise, but he's had trouble making it happen. You could hear the frustration in his voice this past Wednesday when he gathered a press conference to discuss a bill to raise the federal minimum to $10.10 an hour, which had stalled in Congress.
While Republicans have been deciding whether to even allow a minimum wage bill to come up for a vote, you've seen 10 states and the District of Columbia go ahead and raise theirs.
Not just states that have raised the minimum wage. On May 1st, the day after the president's speech, Seattle Mayor Ed Murray unveiled his proposal to raise the city's base wage to $15 an hour.
This is a historic moment for Seattle. It is setting a standard for what progressives and what a progressive city can do, what we can do to change the middle class.
It's no coincidence, says Harold Meyerson, that our city has done what our nation as a whole could not. He's the editor-at-large of the American Prospect, and in a recent article called The Revolt of the Cities, he argues that America's cities are leading the liberal political agenda. Harold Meyerson, welcome to The Record.
Good to be here.
It's good to talk to you. You say that the mayors and the council members elected in 2013 are one of the most progressive cohorts of elected officials in recent American history. We've got Mayor Bill de Blasio of New York. We got Betty Hodges of Minneapolis, Javier Gonzalez of Santa Fe, and, of course, we have Mayor Ed Murray. We've also elected Chama Sawant, a socialist, to our city council. So if you were to characterize the broad agenda for this class of 2013, what is it?
Well, this is an agenda that, if you want to put colors on it, is somewhat red and somewhat green. All of these candidates, and a bunch more, too, like Bill Peduto in Pittsburgh, ran on platforms that involved a greater greening of their city and their city's infrastructure and buildings and more economic equality. Now, in a broad sense, this is a version of what President Obama is talking about, but the majorities to enact these policies certainly don't exist in Congress, but they do exist in most major American cities, which have become really bedrock democratic and liberal terrain over the last 25, 30 years.
Different kind of leadership 25, 30 years ago in many American cities. They've shifted almost, from about half red to almost entirely blue. What's behind the change?
Yeah, well, 20 years ago, of the dozen largest cities, half of them had Republican mayors. Today, just one does, and that's sort of an accidental mayor since the Democratic mayor of San Diego, California, Bob Filner, turned out to be something of a jerk and had to leave abruptly. And so 26 of the 30 largest American cities right now have Democratic mayors. Not all of them are progressive, but many of them are. And what we've seen is, I think, major demographic change. These cities have led the demographic change in terms of immigration, in terms of rising Latino and Asian populations, but also over the last decade in particular in terms of millennials moving into cities and essentially communities of color and millennials are more liberal on both social and economic issues than other Americans. And where these groups have come together and formed a kind of political coalition, you have city governments like the one in Seattle or the ones in those other cities that are willing to undertake real serious progressive reform.
Of course, it's not just demographics, right, Harold Meyerson? We've also seen unions reconstitute themselves and build coalitions.
We have, and surprisingly, perhaps, these aren't really the public employee unions that have the kind of employee-employer relationship with city governments. They tend to be unions that are heavily populated by immigrants, janitors' unions, hotel and restaurant worker unions, supermarket checkout clerk and other clerk unions. These are at the core of these kind of coalitions and healthcare workers. And you saw that in Seattle with a healthcare union and the food and commercial workers taking a real leading role in the discussions around the $15 an hour minimum wage.
We discussed this ourselves on the air. The unions are finding ways to broaden their appeal by reaching out to people who may not otherwise even be union members. Is that more true in the cities?
Well, it's really interesting because, in a sense, what the union members of the Committee of 24 in Seattle were doing was collective bargaining, not for their members with an employer, but for 100,000 workers, most of whom were not members of any union, with business, but the enforcement wouldn't be a union contract. It would be the city ordinance. And so it really is a kind of representation of a broader group of workers. Once upon a time, 50, 60 years ago, when unions represented far more workers, they could represent a lot of workers just as they were members. In what happened in Seattle, they ended up bargaining for folks who are not members and who will not be members, but who will clearly gain, I think, from the increase in the minimum wage.
The journalist Thomas Edsel responded to your article in the New York Times. He asked a question. I ask you this. How can governments enact a progressive agenda when big business, big earners, people who don't support this, might just pull up and leave?
Well, it depends sort of on the nature of the business and the breadth of the jurisdiction. Manufacturing firms have shown, complete readiness, willingness to move anywhere for any number of factors, and certainly lower wages is one of them. But most of the businesses these days that would be affected by this in major American cities aren't manufacturing firms at all. They're food stands, they're supermarkets, they're businesses to which the service of the local community is the raison d'etre for the business. It's difficult to think that every coffee joint in Seattle is about to move over the city line. Now that said, in a place like Los Angeles, which is the city where I lived for 50 years and know best, there are 87 separate cities in L.A. County. And it would make more sense in general to have the county raise the minimum wage than for the city of L.A. and, say, 20 other cities, but leaving, 50 cities with a somewhat lower wage. So generally, the larger the jurisdiction, the better, but it is also the case that it's within cities that you tend to get the most effective liberal coalition. So it's a trade-off.
All right, Harold Meyerson, I appreciate you talking about it with us. Thank you.
Thank you.
Harold Meyerson is editor-at-large of the American Prospect, op-ed columnist for the Washington Post.